One thing I neglected to mention during the announcements, and I'll just briefly touch on it, and I mentioned it last week, is the Right Now Media program that we're making available to the entire church. Now, if you didn't get an invitation to join it this week, it's simply because I didn't send it this week. But I will be. And so you can be looking for those in your mailbox, and hopefully between now and Wednesday I'll have them all out to everyone. If for one reason or another you don't get it by next Friday, if you can shoot me off a quick email so that I know that you didn't get it, and I may not have your email address. So if you could send that to me, there is absolutely no charge to you for this. And they said that they will not be using your email addresses for anything other than connecting you to the program. Now, Right Now Media is one of the largest resources I've ever seen for Christian... Oh, children, you are dismissed for Children's Church. Go! Whoever's going, go, go, have a good time. Michael's back there, he's got some stuff for you. Right Now Media is one of the greatest resources I've seen for Christian material. And there's a lot of teaching material on there, there's things for your private devotions, there's things for leadership development, just a lot of stuff on there. And you can cruise through the whole thing. But all you have to do is you set up your own password and it's available to you. So we will, I'll be sending that out hopefully by Wednesday to everyone that I've got email addresses. If you choose that you don't want to get involved with it, that's 100%. That's up to you. If you choose to latch on to it, fantastic. They have said that they will give us a small piece of equipment if we get like 40% of the church signed up. I'm not sure what the incentive for them is for that, but who knows. We'll go with that. So anyway, Right Now Media, expect an invitation from me. Check your spam filters. If you don't hear from me, it could be there. Last week, we spent some time looking at the attacks that often come our way when we take a stand for the standards of God in the book of Nehemiah. When you're upholding the principles of God, there's always someone who's going to be offended. Always. I was watching a TV program this week, and I don't know what the name of the program was. I should have paid more attention to it, but I wasn't paying a lot of attention to it. But this should have triggered something in me. Because this lady, she was a young professional woman, and in an office, she was a boss. And so she had a number of people working under her. And the thing that disturbed me, and I wish I had paid more attention to it because it was disturbing, she had a mom who was an evangelical Christian. And the thrust of this particular show was how intolerant her mother as a Christian was. That was kind of, and it wasn't subtle. It was, because you are a Christian, you think you're better than everybody else, and how dare you be so intolerant to everyone that I work with. That was, and whenever you stand for the principles of God, there's going to be someone who's offended by it. That is just out there. Jesus said, "You're the light of the world. A city on a hill can't be hidden." In other words, if your life is truly reflecting the light of Christ, those around you are going to take notice. There should be something different that separates us from the standards of the world. There should be. There should be a difference in the way you conduct your life. There should be. We are to be in the world, but not of the world. John said, "Everyone who does evil hates the light and will not come into the light for fear his deeds will be exposed." The light illumines evil in our world. And Paul wrote, "But everything exposed by the light becomes visible." And little wonder there's offense. When we, as people who follow Jesus, stand for truth. You see, there's a natural inclination, and this shouldn't be a no-brainer, but there's a natural inclination to sin. We all inherited it. Anybody have any problem? No, that's not the right way to put that. Has anybody had any challenges teaching your kids to do wrong? No, they do it all on their own. And so our challenge is to teach them to do right. There's a natural inclination. It's an inherited inclination. And it takes us in a different direction from God's intention for our lives. Boy, I launched into that sermon in a hurry, didn't I? You see, when we surrender our will to the authority of God's will, our lives take a 180-degree turn. We're no longer the same. We are different. Now, there's still that natural inclination, but there is a power within us that gives us the ability to overcome that inclination. And this is what Robin's talking about when she talks about freedom. Because we are set free, we have the ability to overcome. The reality is that when light brushes darkness, friction happens. That's what John was talking about in the verse we just read. That's what is taking place in the chapters we looked at last week in Nehemiah. The enemies of God started the attack from the outside. They were offended by this group of Jews who were establishing the wall of protection around Jerusalem. They were opposed to the city of God being reestablished. We do not want them here. You see, when someone is outside the family, opposes what's going on, it's really easy to identify it. You don't have to second guess where they're coming from. There's opposition, there's offense, and you hear it. In chapter 6, the attacks continue. But there's a major difference. In this chapter, and I don't know whether you had a chance to read through 4, 5, and 6 again, but in this chapter, most of the wall is rebuilt. There's no gaps in it. The doors aren't yet in place, but it's coming along really well. And Sanballat and Tobiah, and then another fellow, and I can't pronounce his name, Jehashem, realized their insults and threats had little or no effect. So they tried another tactic. This is all external. They tried another tactic to take out the leader. They tried to persuade Nehemiah, come down to the village, let's talk about this. Let's look at things, let's discuss this. They wanted him to come down to their level. And if he had, he would be much more vulnerable. You see, if we stoop down to that level, we're much more vulnerable and we're a very easy target. If you're a Christian leader today, Satan continues to use this tactic. Remember I said last week, if you look at the book of Job, God puts parameters on what Satan can do. So there's nothing new under the sun. The attacks of Satan continue. And while they may look slightly different, he doesn't have any new tricks up his sleeve. He continues to use the same tactics. If you're a Christian leader today, he will use this tactic to take you out. I know of leaders who by one means or another have started on this slope the enemy has thrown at them. You cannot afford to drop your guard for one moment. Ever. Ever. So, when that didn't work, these three guys tried to blackmail Nehemiah. They tried to assassinate his character. They tried to assassinate his motives. And here again, if you're in a Christian ministry, if you're a Christian leader for any length of time, you'll experience someone who's talked about you behind your back. It just happens. When you experience someone who approaches you with some sincere sounding, but maybe a little bit off the wall comments, don't give them an audience. Don't give them an ear. Stop and ask, is this real? Where's this coming from? What's this about? All Nehemiah had to do to maintain a standard of truth, because you see, you can never go wrong with the truth. There's a saying, you know, when I speak the truth, I don't have to have a good memory. Right? So all Nehemiah had to do to maintain the standard of truth was say, nothing like what you are saying is happening. You are just making it up in your head. Stand for the truth under all circumstances. Ask yourself, is this true? Does this hold to a standard of truth? And when none of that worked, finally they managed to bribe some people who were close to Nehemiah, attempting to persuade him to protect his own hide. If you read through the chapters, you'll see this. Use the temple for protection. You know, save yourself, Nehemiah. Go to the temple. In other words, desecrate it by hiding in it. That would have caused Nehemiah not only to sin, but it would undermine the work that he was doing, and it would have destroyed his reputation among the people. Oh yeah. Oh yeah. He will protect himself, but what about us? Bottom line, Nehemiah stuck to his plan. God had placed this in his heart. God gave him a burning desire to see this wall of protection placed around Jerusalem, and he was going to stick to it. He was not going to be knocked off course by friends or foes. No, this is where we're going. This is what we're doing. And we have to stay on focus. That's what chapters 4 through 6 are all about. But I want to take another look at them this week. And this morning I want to look at another of Satan's tactics. You see, it's pretty common to expect attacks from the outside, from the outside world. That's going to happen. And you just know it's going to come at you at some point or another. But this type of attack, the attack that we're going to talk about today, blindsides you. It came from within. It's the kind of stuff that church splits are made out of. This is the stuff that destroys churches and discourages people. You see, no Christian organization has ever been divided because of attacks from outside. Can you name any? No. As a matter of fact, attacks from the outside tend to strengthen us. No, these attacks came from the inside. And it's always something that takes us totally by surprise when it comes from the inside. And I don't want to pause for just a moment and ask, as you read over chapter 5 of Nehemiah, did you wonder a little bit about where did that come from? Anybody? Like, where in the world did that come from? You see, I think you could read chapters 4 and 6 and skip right over 5 and you'd never really miss it. So where in the world did that come from? And let me summarize what happened. There's a great lesson to be learned in this chapter. As the Jews were returning from the bondage of Babylon, they brought little or nothing with them except a will to survive and move ahead. Freed slaves usually don't have too much in the line of possessions to bring with them. The land was in a state of famine. There was little to eat. And as so very often happens, the ones who have the least are hit the hardest. To make matters worse, even though they were allowed to return to their family land claims, the king of Persia still expected taxes to be paid. So here they are with little or nothing to eat, no real possessions of their own, facing the wrath of the king if they didn't pay the taxes. And if the situation wasn't bad enough, the solution made it even worse. Okay, Nehemiah 5:1. Now when the men and their wives raised a great outcry against their Jewish leaders, you see, the complaint was against the Jews in the city who controlled the money. Some were saying, "We and our sons and daughters are numerous. In order for us to eat and stay alive, we must get grain." Others were saying, "We are mortgaging our fields, our vineyards, and our homes to get grain during the famine." Still others were saying, "We have had to borrow money to pay the king's tax on our fields and vineyards. Although we are of the same flesh and blood as our countrymen, and though our sons are as good as theirs, yet we have to subject our sons and daughters to slavery. Some of our daughters have already been enslaved, but we are powerless because our fields and our vineyards belong to others." Their own people, the people from within, were taking full advantage of the situation, and in order to buy food and to pay the king's tax, they either had to borrow money at rates that made it impossible for them to pay them back, or they were forced into family poverty and literally sell their kids into slavery. What a situation. It's something that we can't even begin to imagine. Being caught between a rock and a hard place. Nowhere to go. What are we going to do with this? Now, before we look at Nehemiah's response, and I love his response to these accusations, we have to get a little handle on how he was dealing with the plight himself. Okay? Verses 14 through 18 tell us that he refused to charge the governor's tax. Not only could the king demand taxes, but so could the governor, Nehemiah being the governor. But he refused. Furthermore, he refused to eat food that was normally allotted to the governor because he knew the burden this placed on the people rather than inflicting this burden on them. What did he do? He invited 150 people into his home every night to eat. He wasn't serving Kraft dinner, by the way. You know, this wasn't weenies and beans. No. Here's the grocery list. Each day, one ox, 6 choice sheep, some poultry were prepared for me. And every 10 days, an abundant supply of wine of all kinds. In spite of all this, I never demanded the food allotted to the governor because the demands were heavy on these people. Nehemiah was one of those rare leaders who was willing to put his money where his mouth was. He believed in setting the example. He led the way in this. He showed them how you should live. He didn't have to, but he did. God expects us. God expects us to live by example. He expects us to represent the servant leader who died for us. That's what he calls us to do. And one of the things, and just a side note to all of this, one of the things that so attracted me to this church when I looked at it, like in reading the profile and everything a little over a year ago now, was the servant leadership that's here. We are so blessed. We are so incredibly blessed. This clothing bonanza and the impact it has on the community, you cannot underestimate it. And the other things that are going on and will continue to go on, because God has impacted your lives. And I don't want you to ever minimize what's going on, what He's doing with you. You see, when times are tough, that's when godly character really comes forward. And I don't know what the future holds for us as a church, but I know how this church will respond to whatever the need is. Nehemiah invited 150 needy people into his home every night. He led by example. So, that's the character of the leader. When he heard what the power brokers were doing, how they were taking advantage of those who had so little, he stood with credibility behind them. You see, he could stand the test. So, Nehemiah 5:6, we'll jump back to chapter 5, verse 6. When I heard their outcry and the charges, I was very angry. I pondered them in my mind and then accused the nobles and officials. I told them, you are exacting usury, that's interest, from your own countrymen. So I called together a large meeting to deal with them. Now, I can imagine that there was a huge, we're in trouble from those guys. Remember last week, when the enemies attacked Nehemiah, what was the first thing he did? We don't do anything until we pray. Okay? So, the first thing Nehemiah did when he had the enemies attack was he prayed. But it's interesting. When Nehemiah heard about this, he did not need God's counsel. He did not spend a little bit of time and say, oh, I think I need to pray about this. No. Why not? Because he already knew what God's will was. He knew what God's intention was. There is a time to pray and there's a time to move. And this was one of those times when you jump right into it. When we are confronted by something that we know is wrong, we shouldn't have to ask God about it, should we? My, you guys are quiet today. Take a look at this chapter. There's one thing that really sticks out. When I heard their outcry and their charges, I was very angry. I pondered them in my mind. He weighed them in his mind. He looked at them. Injustice should make us angry. When we look at the things that are backing us into a corner that we just don't know what to do, how do we respond to them? What are those things that just kind of hit us broadside? How do we respond to them? Well, excuse me. I mentioned this a couple weeks ago, so I'm going to bring it back again. Do you guys know who Bill Hybels is? Anybody? Okay, he's the pastor at Willow Creek in Chicago. Okay, huge church. There's a book that he's written called Holy Discontent. Okay, and there should be a discontent. I believe as followers of Jesus, there should be something inside of us that makes us just a little bit edgy. I've mentioned that before. By mentioning that, it makes my board a little edgy. But in Holy Discontent, and I mentioned this a few weeks ago, I'll do it again. Hybels talks about Popeye the Sailor Man. Popeye's girlfriend, Olive Oil. And whenever something happened to Olive Oil, what did he do? Well, Popeye wanted to go and save her. So what he would do is he would pop the lid off a can of spinach. He would down it. But before doing that, he'd say, that's all I can stands and I can't stands it no more. And off he'd go and he would save Olive Oil, his girlfriend. Nehemiah, when he was confronted by what these guys were doing, had a Popeye moment. He says, that's all I can stands and I can't stands it no more. He was angry. He was ticked. And as the governor, he was calling them into his offices and saying, this is not going to continue. These guys were influential. These were the power brokers. These were the wealthy. They had the influence, and yet they were abusing their fellow countrymen. Nehemiah had all he could stand. Enough is enough. Rather than using the blessings that they had been given, they used what they had been given to exact usury on their fellow Jews. And they compounded the situation in taking full advantage of it. And for Nehemiah, this got personal. You see, I think that there's a huge implication for all of us in this. When you look at the world, when you look around the world and you see the injustices in the world, not only in our own community, certainly they're here, but all around us. Friends, we are privileged. And in spite of a downturn in the economy, we are wealthy. And we have abilities. We have education. We live in a country of natural resources that most other countries would go to war for. And with all of the abundance that we have, it comes with responsibility as well. I really hope that I and none of us take the short period of time that God allots us on the face of the planet to simply use it for our own purposes. There's got to be more than life to life than simply that. What is the thing that you simply can't stand and you can't stand it no more? What are those things that well up in your heart? At what point are you willing to say enough is enough? I think I revealed a little bit of my heart last week when I talked about Cambodia. I've walked the streets. I've talked to the people. I've seen the need. And I am so excited about Marie Ann's coming. And I hope that we might just capture a little bit of the vision that she has. But it's not just for her. For me, it is. I mean, this is one of the deep-seated passions of my life. But for you, it may be battered women who have little or nowhere to turn. Or it might be the number of unborn babies that are murdered in our country every year. How concerned are you about the youth in our area? I am so glad that we are launching a youth event for our kids, and I'm hoping that it is something that's exciting that they will want to invite their friends to. The drug problem, it's an epidemic. The number of teen moms. I don't know what the statistics here are in the north, but I know what it is back where I come from. What are we willing to do about it? I think God places a burden on each of our hearts. And with that burden comes responsibility to do something. What is your passion? What is your concern for people in third world countries? You know, in the next few weeks, I hope we're able to hear from some of the girls who have gone out from this church this last summer. I got a great note from Taylor Whitehouse this week, just thanking you, us, for the support that we've given her. She's going to be taking off shortly. Keep Taylor in your prayers. We have to stop and ask ourselves, how do I respond when I encounter some of the social injustices all around me? Do we just shake our head and walk away thanking God that situation isn't mine? Or are we compelled to get involved? I firmly believe that the day will come when God will hold us all accountable for the burdens that he places on our hearts. You see, God doesn't expect us to do everything, but he does expect us to do something. I believe that Nehemiah was in tune with the heart of God. This was the catalyst for rebuilding the wall. It was even a greater building project. It was a spiritual building project that was going on at the same time. He was developing a heart that was in tune with the heart of God, understanding the things that truly are important to him. Truly important to him. And do you know what the most important thing is on God's heart? The very most important thing that God's concerned about? He cares about people. He has a passion for people. And as followers of his, we should carry that same burden. Jesus told us to love God and to love others. It wasn't simply a New Testament command. Deuteronomy 6:4 says, "Hear, O Israel, the Lord our God, the Lord is one. Love the Lord your God with all your heart, with all your soul, and with all your strength." And then Jesus elaborated, "Love your brother, love your neighbor as you love yourself." And then in Leviticus 19:8 says, "Don't seek revenge or carry a grudge against any of your people. Love your neighbor as yourself. I am God." It's about people. All that we are needs to be about people. Oh, I love studies where we grow, we explore the Word, where we dig deeper into understanding, where we find nuances and meaning. I think that's really important. But it's not just about my own personal growth. It's something greater. There are two principles that will test time for all eternity. And neither of these principles do you need to pray about. Unless it's simply, "Lord, give me more passion. Lord, give me more ability. Lord, give me more passion to love you. Give me more ability to love people." You don't have to ask God, "Is this what your intention is for me?" No, he lays it out pretty clear. This week, I want to challenge you. Look around. What is the thing that God places in front of you that moves you to say, "I can't take it no more"? What are those things that I wish I could do something about it, but good grief, if it were Marie Ann, she said, "Oh, I wish I could do something about it, but I'm only 61. I'm not old enough to launch into a building project in Cambodia. I don't have the resources because I'm on a pension now." No, she saw that as an opportunity, and she's asking God to give her life until she's 95 so that she can see 1,000 more orphans saved. What does God want from each of us? It may scare you when you think about the possibilities. You may be able to come up with 1,000 reasons why you shouldn't get involved. You may try to silence that work, that passion, that thing that's deep inside of you. But when God places a burden on our heart, I tell you, it does not go away. And we need to respond to it. God can and will use each of us if we simply let Him. I believe He gives each of us that sense of holy restlessness in our souls, that Nehemiah restlessness, that something's got to be done. One man. And you know what happened? When God empowers something, when God is behind it, when God instills a desire to move forward, this is what takes place. So the wall was completed on the 25th of Elul in 52 2 days. Do you guys hear that? This is the wall that surrounded Jerusalem. It was totally destroyed, and it was complete in 52 days. Why? Because God instilled a passion to see it done. And when Nehemiah latched onto that passion and that direction, it was an unstoppable force, not because of who Nehemiah was, but because of who God is. And friends, when God puts that same passion inside of you, you are an unstoppable force, not because of who you are, but because of the one who you serve. God can and will use you if you let Him. I believe He gives us that sense of holy restlessness in our souls. It's about how we go about doing His business for the sake of the kingdom. What is it? What is that thing that you can't stand and you can't stand it no more? Let's pray. Our Father and our God, Lord, I pray that we will use every ounce, every fiber of our being to see Your kingdom impacted. Lord, give us that sense of restlessness. Keep us from ever being content. Oh God, as long as there's someone that doesn't know You, Father, show us Your ways. Give us direction for the things that we need to do. Father, move within us and use us. Oh, Father, there is a time when we come before You humbly and seek Your will. And there's times when Your will is so abundantly clear. Oh, God, show us what You'd have us do. Father, I pray Your continued blessing over this church. Lord, that we will impact this peace community. Oh God, for the sake of Christ. I ask this in Jesus' name. Amen. Thank you.